Okay, yo everybody, welcome to Brand New Techish. It's episode 32, I believe. I'm Michael Behane, the CEO of peopleofcolorintech.com, and I'm joined with
Abba Desi, author of Dream Big, Hustle Hard.
I'm gonna have like a book called Dream Small and Be Lazy.
Do it. We'll be serving both sides of the market.
Yeah, for real. For the lazy people and the hard workers.
Yes.
Yeah, so yeah, we got so many interesting and depressing
big
and amazing
guan.
Big things going in stories that we want to run
in tech and
through.
In ish.
Yeah, for real. But first, we've got to give a big round of applause, clap clap,
whoop, whoop.
And appreciation to our sponsors. Take it away, y'all.
Michael and I both know how hard it is starting out as first-time founders with a limited network and little access to capital.
That's why we want to thank OneTech for sponsoring this episode of Techish. They are doing fantastic work supporting underrepresented tech founders in London, helping to change the face of startups in the city.
One of their main goals is to double the number of female and Black and minority ethnic-led tech startups raising investment through their parent entity, Capital Enterprise.
They do this by connecting underrepresented entrepreneurs together and supporting them via mentorship, workspace, access to pre-accelerators, and helping them get investment ready.
So if you're in London, just starting out and in need of support, go to weareonetech.org and apply now.
And tell them Techish sent you.
Blockstack is an open source network and development platform that makes it easy to build decentralized apps that can scale today.
With Blockstack, users own and are in control of their information. And you know we care a lot about privacy at Techish.
Yep, we do. And they're running a program called App Mining that rewards developers building apps on their platform, paying out $100,000 each month across all registered apps.
Explore more about the program by going to app.co/mining.
Okay, so the first story is, I think we've got to do this Oracle thing because it's a bit of a mad one.
Wow.
Abba's face, I can see already, is not happy.
I'm so unhappy on so many levels.
Yeah.
Also, it's because we know it's not just Oracle. But anyway, you explain what happened.
So basically, Oracle is being sued by, I don't know what the body is in the States that looks into this kind of employment. I think it's the US Department of Labor office I've got in my show notes. And they're being sued for withholding approximately $400 million in wages to their underrepresented workers, so Black, Latinx, Asian workers, and women. And it's been done in the form of wages. So they've been underpaying those particular groups within the company, or allegedly. And they've come out and they've denied it. But if the article goes into a few of the ways in which they do it, they hire a lot of students on international visas and then funnel them into, because obviously you're sponsored, so you are in the country on the behest of Oracle.
Yeah.
So you have a poor negotiation position in terms of salary. And then they also do it because they rely on prior salary information. So you're applying for a job and they might ask you, so how much do you earn? And then from that kind of weak negotiation position, as opposed to just saying, this is what the role entails and this is how much we'll pay you for it, they funnel you into a low-paid role, into a low-paid track, essentially.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Abba, this is your bread and butter in terms of the work that you do.
Yes.
The negotiation. In fact, you had a great story recently about, well, it's not a great story, it's a bit bad story. You did an article for The Independent. I don't know if you want to put this out there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's been resolved now, but I got a lot of noise on Twitter around that. I think one of the things that we really need to address, and I try to bring it up in every episode, so hopefully at some point we're all going to get there and understand this. There is like structural oppression in society, right? It is like embedded in everything that we do. And the fact that Oracle is relying on pre-existing salary information for underrepresented people is doing nothing to do things like increase representation of those people, give them their fair market value in terms of their wages, increase the representation of women, people of color, Latinx, Black, Asian, whatever, at every level. So that was like really frustrating to read, and even more frustrating because it's like, okay, this is the company that got busted, but like how many other companies are probably doing the same thing and not getting busted? What happened with me was I was asked to write an article about the mistreatment of Black people.
The irony.
In the tech industry in November, which I did. I was given a very short deadline. So it was actually an opportunity that was passed to me by the amazing Anne-Marie Infidon of Stemet. So she'd been asked to write this article, but she was traveling. And so she sort of looped me into this conversation saying, oh, you know, would you be willing to write for this? And anyone who doesn't know, please look up Stemet. They do amazing work to increase the representation of women in STEM, going into schools and doing wonderful events. So yeah, she's also, Anne-Marie, like an incredibly smart, intelligent person, like one of the youngest people to get like a maths A level in the UK and all this awesome stuff.
MBE as well.
Exactly. So anyway, she does a lot of work in the tech industry. She is a Black woman. And so her being busy, I think she was flying to speak at an event somewhere else. She sort of looped me in and I said, okay, great, I'll write this. Now, as everyone knows, I work at Product Hunt, I work on Hustle Crew, I already do other jobs, but I was given a deadline of effectively a few hours to do 600 words. So I kind of put the rest of my work on hold, did this draft, sent it over, and just caught up with the rest of my work later that day. I sent my invoice, like all invoices, 30-day payment period.
Right.
And, you know, come
turn into 30 months,
third
basically.
Week of January, I'm suddenly like approaching a 60-day period. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is pretty late.
Yeah.
And what frustrated me was that when we were exchanging emails about the editorial process, the responses were speedy. Like, have you finished that yet? Can you include this? Can you do that? Can we tweak the title to this? So I was like, okay, cool, fair enough. The feedback loop was there. Once the invoice came through, feedback loop died.
Tumbleweed.
Died.
Silence.
I was like, oh, okay. Where's the invoice at? Where's the invoice at? No payment. And I think for me, you know, this is a new era. Okay, it's 2019. I'm not taking the baggage of 2018 into 2019 with me.
Yep, amen.
I am acting differently. If you do the same thing over and over and expect a different result, as Einstein said, you're the crazy one.
That's the definition of stupidity, basically, right?
Yeah, so for me, it was just like, okay, like, how do I address this? And because the editor had not responded to me, I just tweeted to her publicly. And, you know, super grateful to all my followers that amplified my voice
came out and stood for me.
I need to check my bank balance, actually, because they say I've been paid.
We're going to take a quick pause in the show. We'll have a check bank balance.
But I just think, why do we continue to devalue the experiences of minority groups and underrepresented people? Why is my time not valuable? Why is my time worth less than your time? Oh, now that you have what you want, you can ignore me. And I know that this is happening to freelancers around the world. And of course, not just Black women too, but historically we are often at the bottom of the pile. So I just feel it's even more important for us to stand up for it. And sometimes people are like, oh, you're really like sensitive about this issue. Damn straight, I'm sensitive about this issue because it is not getting better.
For real.
When Black women are paid the same as their white male peers, I will shut up. Until that day, y'all going to hear a lot about this from me.
And the thing is as well, you've got a platform, so you were able to put a spotlight on what happened to you. If you haven't got a platform, how many people are getting screwed over?
One of our most popular episodes, season one, Tech-ish.
I think it was like episode two, actually.
It may have been. Yeah, because I hadn't seen the film in season one. Anyway, we're talking about, of course, Wakanda, Black Panther.
Forever.
So, big news dropped last week. 7 Oscar nominations, including Best Picture.
Amazing.
First ever comic book film. See, we had to come and show them how it's done. That's why they haven't been nominated before.
Yeah, I know. I feel like that film was such a cultural impact, they just couldn't deny it.
Of course.
They were saying that they were going to do like a separate category for like...
Black movies.
Not black movies. Yeah, they pretty much have done. It was going to be like for like culturally significant movie, like blockbusters essentially, and have that as a separate category to like best film. Say like, okay, best film is more for like artistic type films, and then like if you've got a film like Black Panther that's made $1 billion and everybody loves it, but it's not necessarily, you know, the Shawshank Redemption, like
it's better.
Yeah. But anyway, that idea was so unpopular, so I think they were like, F it, we just got to put Black Panther in like the main category because we can't ignore this film.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm happy, man. Like I'm not sure if hand on heart, I would say that it's like, How am I going to say this without offending everybody that's listening right now?
I'm close enough to slap you, man.
Low violence, please. Black Panther to me was an amazing moment, and it was an amazing moment for me personally. But in terms of as a work of film, would I say that it was one of the best films of the year as a piece of art? I wouldn't say that. Abba's face is about to scream me.
What's got your vote, sir?
You know what? I don't even know what else was listed. But the thing is, I think in my mind, I do have that delineation between comic book films and like... films, if that makes any sense. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh,
my days. All right, let us
know
on hashtag
Tech-ish. You were mad at me because I didn't watch Avengers, and now you're saying you don't
but
even...
But the thing is, I would never say the Avengers is an Oscar-worthy winning movie. Like, I wouldn't say that, like, I'm happy that it got nominated because it represents something culturally, but in terms of, like, I wouldn't say that it's the best film of the year.
Lord of the Rings has won before. Do you know that?
Yeah, that's BS.
Oh, yeah, okay, so no, Lord of the Rings can win, but no, Black Panther can't win.
That's what I'm saying. I don't agree with that.
Well, it's been done now.
Yeah, it's too late.
The precedent has been set.
Yeah, it's too late. Yeah, so yeah, maybe I'm being a bit harsh.
If Lord of the Rings can win...
Why not?
Thank you.
What kind of forever?
I don't even think it was the first one. Maybe it was the first one. I don't know. But like, I'm looking at some of the past winners, and it's like, I mean...
Yeah, it's a bit hit and miss.
The King's Speech won?
Yeah, that wasn't that good.
Come on.
Yeah, it's true.
Come on.
Ah, you convinced me. Okay, maybe great. Maybe it is worthy.
I wanted to win all seven.
Yeah, why not, man? Yeah, so I want to quickly talk about the recap the Fyre Festival, because when we talked about it last week, I actually hadn't seen it, the documentaries. And so Jill Burke, who is an entrepreneur who sold the company to Amazon, fantastic black woman entrepreneur, like she killed it. She tweeted, and it was so funny, she tweeted, "One of the investors that gave me the most trouble is prominently mentioned in the Fyre documentary. I have so many questions." And this, I was just like, and then I posted on Instagram and I was like, yo, we live in a world where scam artists can raise millions quicker than qualified black women. And I want to know what your thoughts
are.
Wow. You've seen the documentary now, right?
I watched the beginning. I didn't finish it. Sorry. But
you got the gist.
Yeah. Basically, I'm not surprised.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated and annoyed, but I'm also not surprised. I'm like 2 and a bit years deep into doing the Hustle Crew mission, fostering inclusion in tech and all this kind of stuff. And I see that people are, you know, people with privilege are invisible to it. They don't understand. And they find someone that looks like them and sounds like them and they like them and they give them an easier ride than someone that doesn't look like them and who they don't understand. So, you know, I'm not surprised. You know, 0.02% of venture capital funding went to women in 2016. So in 2017, we were all like, oh, this is ridiculous. Then the data came out again in 2018, same number.
Completely
same
flat.
Number.
That's a joke to
you. And so you have to laugh, because if you don't laugh, you'll cry.
And
I'm
this
not,
dude raised
like
$27
surprised.
Million. He raised $27 million.
For a festival.
For a festival.
Come on.
No, it was an app originally. It was an app. The funny thing is, the app isn't a bad idea. The app was, it would connect you with artists. So let's say I got my birthday and I'm like, I want Ja Rule to perform. I could go on the app and book him in an Uber style manner. And the idea was, nice. Okay, let's throw this festival to kind of market the app. But
how much would you have to pay for that, though?
What, the app or the festival?
For Ja Rule to come play at your birthday.
£20. $20. And then taking, I don't know. I did an article recently with Bria Sullivan, actually. She is like a Googler, and she does a lot of amazing work. She does a thing called the Start Fund that she helps on, a program called Tech Stack. A lot of great work, anyway. And she did a negotiation workshop, she said. And she said it was the most important thing she ever did in her career. Because I think the person said that, like, women over their careers literally lose out on millions of dollars just because of the inability to,
to ask for it. Well, this is the thing in the book, Ask for It. So if you are a woman listening to this podcast, go on Amazon right now and buy a copy of a book called Ask for It by Dr. Linda Babcock.
Yeah.
This isn't a sponsorship deal. I'm not getting any
references.
You can buy a secondhand copy like I did. It only cost me £2. But that book, it was written by someone that looked after people that left graduate school. So she was in charge of helping people that finished their MBAs get jobs. And what she would do is do research. So 1 year down the line, 5 years down the line, 10 years down the line, she would say to the people she coached, okay, what are you doing and what are you earning? And she found this huge gap to the point where, like, some of the men that had left at the same time were earning 2-3x what their women peers were earning. Right. And she started looking into it. Now, if you and I graduate at the same time and we are both offered the same starting salary, let's say 50K, right? You negotiate that up to 65K. I don't negotiate it at all. Every extra bit that you've earned, you put in a savings account that's only giving you 3% or whatever. In 25 years time, you have like $250,000.
It's real talk,
and I don't. You
and
know
if you
what
put
I mean?
It in like the stock market, it might even be like $1 million.
Exactly. So this idea of like the way those opportunity costs compound over time is huge. And I think what's so evil about this Oracle story is the fact that they basically like played on the vulnerabilities of already marginalized groups. To what end?
Yeah.
To increase their profit margin X
bottom
percent?
Line. The bottom
to
line.
Make the people that own equity in the company who are probably already in the 3-comma club add a few more zeros to the end of their balance?
Mm.
Like, if you're thinking about this idea of like prosperity and making the world a better place, I just don't understand, why are you optimizing for the people who are already comfortable?
Yeah. I think there is a danger that we're conflating two issues, which is one, so there's the whole like lean in Sheryl Sandberg philosophy, which is that, you know, the reason why women are not getting what they want is, and particularly black women, is because they're not leaning in and asking for it. That is a factor. But another factor is you've got companies that are actually being purposefully nefarious and setting up structures to consciously make it harder for those underrepresented groups to get what they deserve.
So
there's two things here. Like there's internal struggle that people might have to ask for more, and then there's also companies that are setting up systems where it's blocking people from even trying. So if I come to you and say, "What did you earn in your last job?" and you're like, "Well, 40,000." Yeah, we'll give you 42. You might say, okay, then negotiate, but you are already at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. So these companies are setting things up in a way to screw you over, sorry.
I also think it's really important to just flag that, you know, Sheryl Sandberg's book is, it's very much a book written by a woman with a lot of privilege in American society. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I just did an inclusion workshop earlier today with a lot of founders and VCs in the room. And we had this conversation because the fact is, if you look at the research that has been done, studies that have been repeated time and time again in different groups and different organizations, you find that there are just double standards. So what works for a man, when a woman emulates that behavior in the workplace, she is penalized. Mm. So the same behavior that a man can do and be labeled assertive, a leader, when a woman does it, she's labeled bitchy, aggressive. And I think the whole challenge around this idea of like lean in is like, one, it kind of like erases all the structural challenges that other people face. And the fact that we need to take an intersectional lens when we think about feminism, because the fact is like, okay, if you're not even in the, if you're not even at the table because you're black or disabled or queer and you haven't been invited, how are you going to lean in?
So Spotify has done a feature that a lot of people have been requesting. And
you get royalties.
It's basically, the feature allows you now to mute an artist that you no longer want to appear on any playlist or their radio feature, where it spontaneously gives you music to listen to. And we all know who this is in response to. This is the R. Kelly thing, essentially. Yeah. So the Mute R. Kelly movement, which has spawned this documentary, which has Spotify came out a while ago and said that we're no longer going to allow him to be on our playlists. Mm-hmm. So now you as a user can go into R. Kelly's profile, for example, mute him, and he will no longer appear on anything Spotify related as far as you're concerned. Now, I completely agree with the feature. I think people should have complete maximum choice. But one thing they didn't do is that if the artist is a feature on another artist's track, let's say it's Jay-Z featuring R. Kelly, that doesn't become muted. That is fine.
Okay.
So the reason why I'm like, they didn't, I feel like they should have went the whole way and done that is because if 1% of Spotify's user base, 2% of Spotify's user base has muted R. Kelly, me now as an artist, even if he's damaged goods already, I definitely wouldn't work with him. If I thought that him writing a track for me, featuring a track for me, would mean that I also would be muted, that would be serious consequences. Because I was reading Nassim Taleb's book, Skin in the Game, and he talks about the minority principle, which is that he gives this anecdote of how he had a dinner and he invited a lot of Orthodox Jews. And he was like, "Oh my God, I didn't bring kosher drinks. I messed up." And they were like, "Oh, don't worry. All the drinks are kosher." And he's like, "How does that make sense? Well, you've got 3% of the population that can't have something and the rest of us don't care. What happens is that the rest of society just kowtows to the needs of that minority for right or wrong, right? So if you have a situation where a significant proportion of a user base on Spotify's platform really doesn't want to listen to this one person's track, you will end their career if they can no longer do features, write, or do anything, if that makes any sense. So I feel like they kind of did it half-hearted.
Well, what happened to like removing people off the platform, or is that censorship?
Yeah. Maybe you're right.
Didn't they remove XXXTentacion?
No, they've never removed anybody from their platform, I don't think. They've only ever said, we will no longer promote them.
Right.
If that makes any sense.
So this means if you have like R&B hits, 2000s, Trapped in the Closet won't come up if you mute R. Kelly.
Right, yeah. What if it's a situation where Tidal, Spotify, iTunes all said we're throwing R. Kelly off the platform?
Why can't he just go to jail? I don't understand.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Like, I feel like the more pressing.
Okay. I think he will. He will.
Okay. I was like, that's a way more urgent thing.
That's a good point.
And justice for the girls and women who are affected. But yeah, I mean, I just want to mute people that are annoying, honestly, because I feel like there are some bands that have just like worked their way into every playlist. And I'm just like not interested in hearing any of their songs.
How do you meet people in real life? That's what I want to know.
Oh, like that Black Mirror episode. Earlier this week or last week, when you'll all be listening to this, I published a post on Medium and LinkedIn about how I went from being an intern at the Financial Times to being featured in the Financial Times, as Michael and I were. Just drop that in there casually.
Drop a bomb.
And one of the things that I think is really important for Michael and I to do on this podcast is share our learnings and share our career hacks and our lessons, our hustle tips, as we call them, to make sure that everyone who's listening is like navigating the world in the most effective way to maximize their ambition and fulfill their goals. And to that end, I just wanted to spend a few minutes talking a bit about how to ask for stuff, particularly how to ask people you don't know for stuff, how to do cold ask for stuff. If you're going to slide into my DMs, Michael DMs, or anyone's DMs, Arlen Hamilton, all the big famous people you admire, I want you to be really like tactical and think through how you're going to like approach that thing even before you ask to really like maximize your chances of success. Now, I always say to people to reach out to me. I'm very open. My DMs are open.
I don't say that. Don't reach out to me, people. I'm joking.
But, you know, I feel like you and I are quite accessible, as are definitely most people within the tech game. And what I've noticed is there are two very different groups of people that reach out to me. And one of them is a group that I am always more inclined to help.
Right.
So I kind of wanted to just illustrate that distinction a bit more so that it will help you. Because if I'm thinking like this, I'm guessing you're thinking like this, Michael. Maybe a lot of other people are thinking like this as well. So this is this idea of before you ask someone for something, like any transaction, like any trade, like any barter, can you think of what you can do in exchange that can be useful for them? Another way to think about it is like a credit system, right?
Right.
Before you debit an account, you need to credit that account, don't you?
Yeah.
You need to put something into there. If I just show up to the ATM, I have no bank card, I have no account, I'm like, yo, can you check out the MVP of my product and tell me what you think? Can you give me feedback and you know, test pilot before I put it on the app store? Can you, you know, proofread this, etc.? You don't know me from Adam. I don't know you from Adam.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, of all of the things that I have to do, why should I decide to do this?
Yeah.
Why should I decide to spend my time on this?
Yeah.
If you approach it differently, oh, hey, Abadesi, I saw that product and it's looking to hire XYZ person. I know a bunch of people in this community. I've actually shared that job posting in the community there. Here are a few people that I think could be really great for it. If there's anything else I can do to help, that would be great. I'll be like, oh, wow, that person's just volunteered to be useful. That's awesome. Now, a few days down the line, that person goes, oh, and by the way, I was wondering, would you have a moment to check my CV? Because now that I think about it, I also want to apply for that role and I'd really appreciate your feedback. I'm going to think, oh, wow, well, they were actually really helpful. Let me just do this bit for them. And, you know, that's just one specific example. But what I'm trying to say is before you ask for stuff, think about the steps that should come before that ask to maximize the probability of getting a yes.
I think it's difficult because, you know, we have this platform. So if you're listening, you think, oh, like, you know, these are my homies. Like, let me just quickly DM them and be like, yo, like, do you want to meet for coffee? I would love for you to be my mentor, for example.
Yes.
And on the surface, that doesn't sound like the worst thing in the world. But unfortunately, it's one of those things where you have to always think, like, it's not even unfortunate. You just have to always think, like, yeah, what can I offer? What's the value I can provide right now? Because obviously people are busy out here. Let's keep it real. We've got bills to pay.
How many messages do you get like that every month? Probably a lot that that one person doesn't see. They don't see your inbox. They don't see that there's like other people like them.
There's a lot of constraints on your time, basically. And anyone that is trying to strive out here and do their thing, you know, and you have to use your imagination. You're like, because like you said, how can you offer value? Let's say you're starting off, you might think, I've got nothing to offer, for example, right? So that is difficult.
But sometimes you can just amplify and support.
That is true. Yeah, like retweet with a comment. I love this blog post. I love this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, do a freestyle. I mentioned Tekish. That was awesome, though.
That was so amazing last week. Yeah, that made my week. And then I saw like a tweet from Arlen Hamilton. She was like, it was about how do you get mentors? And she said, listen, you've got to hack it. Like, start a podcast or start a blog. Like, and that way you can interview people and get them to talk to you. And there's something in it for them. If you've got a platform, even if it's a moderately sized one, I've gone and done interviews on places where the audience might maybe like 200, 300. But I'm like, you know what? Why not? You know what I mean? At least it's 200 or 300 extra people that can get some information from what I'm saying, as opposed to just one individual. Where it would take me an hour to come at my house, an hour to get back.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, where I could be spending that time with my family or my friends, keep it at 100.
Yes.
So just be imaginative about how you can offer value. Yeah. I'm not saying I've got the exact answers because like everything is going to be completely contextual
for
each individual person trying to reach out to. But just think value, value, value.
I also think that there are so many people, I've spoken about this before, but I still get asked it. So I'm going to talk about it again. what is a mentor going to answer that you cannot find an answer to elsewhere? Because a mentor can't tell you what to do with your life.
Yeah, real talk.
No, they can't.
You know what? The thing is,
it's a bit like therapy. Like a therapist just sits there and is a mirror to you.
No, but
you know?
The thing is, if you've got a question, let's say, for example, you're like, I've got a startup. How do I get my first client? And you might be like, let me talk to this mentor person,
you
whatever.
You can find that out online.
Hold on, let me explain. Yeah. That's one situation where you've got the question, you want the answer. You can go on YouTube and find a talk where Bill Gates talks about how he did it. You know what I mean? Or Mark Zuckerberg, there's thousands of hours. But what if you don't even know the question? That's the point. That's why I've seen mentors come really in hand. Where I've seen people who are struggling in a career, all of a sudden they get a mentor. You know what? You'd really be good at software sales. All of a sudden now they're earning six figures a year. Where they were struggling working in a charity, earning, you know, 15,000, 18,000. I've seen that happen because somebody said, you don't even know what you don't know. And I can put you in a direction. So I understand why people want to reach out to people who are ahead of them, because they want that kind of guidance. If you're aimless, you want that kind of guidance. But like you said, I'm not even dissing, because I've been aimless as well. It's not even a joke thing. Yeah. But if you're in a situation where, like you said, like it's a question and answer thing, there's so many resources out there. ABBA's written a whole book. And if you read that book and then you came to ABBA and said, I've read your book, but could you just quickly expound upon that? Maybe, you know, and you find some way to offer value to her as well, then maybe you're talking. But if it's something that ABBA's already answered 1,000 times, and I'm sorry to make this just about you, I'm using it as an example.
Yeah, but no,
ABBA's not
seriously.
Oprah, you know what I'm saying? ABBA's still accessible, relatively speaking. But like, yeah, that's the point I'm making.
Yeah, I think you're so right. I think I just implore you, if you're like, oh, I just need someone to answer this for me, really push yourself and challenge yourself. And is the blocker a lack of information, or is the blocker a lack of a decision?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because a mentor can't make a decision for you.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, 100%. I think it's a part of it is procrastination. Like sometimes, like I've done it, I'm a master at procrastination, like where you're like, we all know what the hard thing is to do. Maybe the hard thing is to put our head down and grind, write that piece of code, write that blog post, write that thing, call 1,000 people, whatever it may be. But it's easy to be like, I need a mentor.
Yeah.
Somebody can just give me the answers and I don't have to, like, you know, do anything but that.
Yeah.
And it is a form of procrastination to a certain extent.
Yeah. I just want to add one more thing as well. Like, I kind of want to flip it around, because there are a lot of people who I admire and I will hope to ask for something one day, but I know that I cannot do that yet.
Oh, you can ask me, Abba, don't worry.
And so the things that I do is be of service to them. Help them. And there are so many little ways I can do it. If someone has a job opening, I'm going to share that in my network. I'm going to share that in my community. If someone's written an article, I'm going to read it. I'm going to give them feedback. I'm going to write a comment on it. I'm going to be like, this was really valuable. I'm going to share this article with these people. If someone's posted a YouTube video, I'm going to subscribe to their channel. I'm going to like it. I'm going to comment on them. I'm going to do small micro things that show my support, that amplify their message and amplify their voice, so that over time I'm adding that credit to that account. And then when the time comes when I really, really need it and they're the only person that can give that thing to me, that's when I'll do my ask, which is the debit.
So a bit of sad news, BuzzFeed is saying that they're going to cut 15% of their staff in a major round of layoffs.
Wow.
I think at the moment, what I've read, they don't even know which individuals are going to be laid off. At the moment, they just outlined that we're cutting off 15%. So by the time this comes out, I think those layoffs would have happened. But, you know, as we record, you know, my commiserations go to the employee base at that company.
Are they not doing as... Oh, sorry to interrupt you.
No, go on.
Are they not doing as well? What happened?
So they raised a whole bunch of money. I got down 500 million over the last decade, but they raised 200 million quite recently.
That's a lot.
I mean, at the end of the day, listen, what is media? Media is getting people's attention and then monetizing that attention. And the platforms that we don't consider to be media platforms, the Facebooks, the Instagrams, and the Twitters, which they are, have consumed everyone's attention. So it's really hard as a media brand to find a model that works to where you can make money. I think they've pivoted a few times to video, you know, and they've tried different ways. But I don't think they found something where at the moment it's sustainable. There's a statement from the CEO, and, you know, in between all the corporate MBA speak, he basically essentially says that, like, we've just haven't found a model that works, and we're going to do these cutbacks, and hopefully after these cutbacks, we can find something, a more sustainable path. But it is insane to have raised over 500 million and you still haven't figured out how to make money. There's a part of me that's just what is going on here? Like,
I feel that a lot of the time, what I observe in the startup game is, let's just open up all this headcount because that's an indicator of growth. Like, we're going to grow, we're going to hire. And sometimes you hire, quicker than you creating the product, creating the work for them to do.
Completely.
And then it's there's a bit of a time lag between acknowledging that. So sometimes some people have already been with you for a while and you're like, hang on a minute, who's actually operating at like 80% capacity? Or do we just have a bunch of people operating at like 50% capacity and we can just trim this?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I'm getting older, but are they as relevant as they were 5 years ago?
You know what, though? They've gone into like serious journalism. I don't know if you followed, but BuzzFeed were the ones that reported that Trump told his lawyer to lie, essentially to Congress or the Senate. I can't remember which one it was, Congress. And so they've done some serious journalism. So in terms of the relevancy, I saw that all over all the mainstream news publications that BuzzFeed reported this, BuzzFeed did this. And I think a few of the US politicians were like, well, BuzzFeed's not a serious news platform. They're fake news, whatever, whatever, right? But they've got a segment where they're trying to be serious, trying to do serious journalism. But you're right, are they relevant? I mean, all they used to be known for was like these listicles, like the top 10 reasons why so-and-so is so-and-so.
Which tree are you?
Yeah, essentially,
which
right?
Which Lion King character are you?
Yeah, it's kind of laughable when you think about it in hindsight. Just leading on from the whole Fyre Festival conversation, you know how I was saying how like the whole beach thing was a metaphor for like influencer culture where we're all looking at something and we get there and it's not real. So do you know the rapper Future? He's like a...
Of course.
Yeah, so he came out and admitted that actually he don't drink lean anymore. Lean is like this famous purple drink where you mix cough syrup with like soda or whatever, right? And lean is like the drug of choice for a lot of these kind of trap rappers. Mm. And his whole music has just been filled with like lean, 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 lean. Like, and back in the day, rap was like, or in the '80s, it was like, don't take drugs. In the '90s, it was, I'm a drug dealer. And in the and now it's like, I take drugs. I take it with me basically, right? And I've really been upset by that. Not upset, but it's really annoying me because like predominantly like in the black community, like weed, like apart from weed, anything else was kind of frowned upon. Like, it's like, rah, like, if you did anything else, we'd be like, rah, you're a crackhead, fam. Like, what are you doing? Like, and like, and just to see that the generation underneath me, like, so celebrate the act of taking drugs and just being completely out of your head and stupefied. Like, and to see that the guy who is one of the main people that is popularizing, he don't even do it anymore.
Wow.
And he's like, I didn't even want to change the content on my music because I felt like people wouldn't accept me for being me. And I just thought, it reminded me of the Fyre Festival conversation because I was like, people are trying to live up to a life that doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
These people are leading you down a river. Don't follow them, please.
That's actually why I really like the latest issue of Guap magazine. So I got to shout out my people at Guap.
Shout out Guap magazine.
So the cover star is a guy called Masterpiece. Mm. He calls himself a rock star. He is a rock star and he will be a rock star. Check it out. But I was really moved in his interview because he was saying how so many people want to be wearing like the newest D squared, the newest Yeezys. And he's like, just be who you are. Mm. Like if your parents buy you clothes from Sports Direct,
rock it.
And he was talking about like, you know, he buys his clothes at charity shops. He buys his tracksuits at Primark.
That's sick.
And I think that's gangster.
Well, you're a cool kid growing up.
Me?
Yeah.
No. Dude, are you serious? I'm still not a cool kid.
Yeah. So I want to talk about what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted. Actually, I don't think she tweeted it. She was at an event with Ta-Nehisi Coates and she said, algorithms can be racist. That's what she said.
Mm.
And some fool that works for some conservative publication was like, what are you talking about, you silly woman? You're saying that technology can be racist?
Another woman with an opinion.
Yeah, basically, right? And then all of these computer scientists and all of these data scientists were just like, she's absolutely 100% correct, you waste man. What are you talking about? Yeah, and it's like, I guess to someone who's outside of the technology industry, it does sound ridiculous to say that.
It's like saying a mathematical formula cannot be racist.
Exactly. But what people need to understand is that humans program algorithms and we program our own biases into these algorithms. So as long as human society has racism within it, these AIs and machine learning algorithms will propagate that. In fact, what we're doing is we're making racism scalable.
Yeah, exactly.
That's exactly what you're doing.
And more entrenched.
Yeah,
right?
Completely.
Because ultimately, like, what is a function? If this, then that. If this, then that. And when we create an algorithm to decide who should come up for parole out of the population of this prison,
right,
it's going to lean into existing data sets to make that decision. And if the existing data sets show that white men are more likely to be up for parole than black men, then the algorithm will go, oh, well, between this white man and that black man, I'm going to pick the white man.
What do you make of talking about AOC, she got under a lot of flak because she was like, we need to have a 70% marginal tax rate on $10 million and above. Now, what happened is, like, a lot of, like, these Fox News goons, they were like, oh, they want to take all of your money, like, 70%. Obviously, they know the difference between what a marginal tax rate is and what a tax rate is. So, marginal tax rate is...
Anything over that amount.
Anything above $10 million will now be taxed at that rate, so 70%. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm all for it. I just wanted to know what...
Well, now that I have more than 10 million, I feel quite...
Yeah, you know, now you're against it. I'm for it now, but when I have 10 million, I'm against it.
I'm not allergic to taxes. I mean, maybe that's because I'm not a super billionaire person. Yeah. But I just think the gap between the richest and the poorest is widening at an accelerated pace, and whatever we can do to close that should be done. And it disgusts me, honestly, that people live in poverty in America, one of the wealthiest nations. People live in abject poverty. Even here in the UK, there are parents going to food banks because they can't feed their children. And I really can't wrap my head around it. That's something I might expect to see if I'm back home in Nigeria or in the Philippines. But here in the UK, seriously? So I'm always open to, like, having discussions about the way that we change, you know, economic policy to close that gap. I'm always open to that conversation.
So there's a really great writer that I discovered recently. The person's name is Anad. I'm going to mangle his surname. Is Girid Haridas. I think that's how you say his surname. He's an Indian American. And I think he's a fellow in a lot of these kind of, like, institutes, the Aspen Institute, all this kind of stuff, right? Mm-hmm. But he has, like, rebuked that whole world and said that, you know, this year, like, Davos should be cancelled. Essentially, Davos is like the family reunion, he said, of the people that have destroyed the world, essentially.
Preach. Look at, like, snap.
If you look at Trump, you look at Brexit, you look at wealth inequality, you look at all of these, like, failing indicators of the health of Western society. And he's argued that the whole non-profit model, the whole social enterprise model, to a certain extent, is an indicator that things are broken. So what happens is you have the winners of capitalism, the winners, the Zuckerbergs, the Gates, the Bezoses, they siphon off as much as they can, humanly possible, right?
Yeah.
Avoid as much tax as possible. And then they say, we are the saviors. Okay, we've destroyed, you know, government revenue, and we've hidden all our money away, and we've starved services that are needed, and we want tax cuts. But now with all the spoils that we've got accrued, we're here to rescue here with our foundation.
Yeah.
And he's like, that model is not right, because it's not a democratic model. I have no say over what Bill Gates does with his money. I'm sure the Gates Foundation does amazing work. I'm not against that in principle. But what I'm saying is that, and where I agree with him, is that we've gone too far into thinking that the only way now is, you know, my social enterprise. And this is somebody who runs a social enterprise, essentially.
Or philanthropy.
Yeah, or philanthropy. Because they don't have those kind of democratic oversight that we require.
Techish are becoming government policy advisors.
How? In what way? Where's my check for that?
Oh, well, it's pro bono for now. But eventually we'll get it for free. Does pro bono mean for free?
Yeah, pro bono literally means
for free. But does it literally come from the Latin? Like, bono means free and pro means for?
Okay. I ain't got private school. I'm not Latin.
UK government announced yesterday some legislation, which is available on gov.uk, around the importance for influencers to be transparent about what's advertising and what's authentic content. And I just thought that was...
I said, damn.
Mm-hmm. I just thought it was quite timely given the conversation we had last week about Fyre Festival and skinny teas and coming back to Fyre Festival again.
Yeah.
We need to crank down on this.
Yeah.
Real talk. And if you're an influencer, because I know everyone's an influencer these days. Micro influencer, mini influencer.
I'm a micro influencer.
You're my micro.
No, but you know what I loved actually in the article? Because they were like, you have to be extremely specific about how you notify your community or audience that you are being paid. So if somebody sends you a freebie, you have to let people know. So if I send you, like, if I got a clothing line, I send you a t-shirt to you, for example.
Yeah.
It's not enough for you to be like, thanks, Michael, for this free top or whatever, right? You have to be like, this is paid content. Even if it's a freebie, even if no money has exchanged hands. And yeah, I think it is necessary. Like, I think too many people now are just like, you know, trying to monetize an audience in a way that's insincere and not truthful to what's actually going on. You think to yourself, how's this person affording all of this stuff? Because they're getting it for free, fam.
Like, yeah,
you
know yeah.
Instagram already built that tool, though, didn't they? The kind of, like, paid partnership tool. And apparently that will suffice as a way of notifying your community that, you know, it's paid content. Because I see a lot of people doing a little quick hashtag at the end, hashtag ad. And like the whole thing is, the hashtag is hidden right at the bottom and you can't even see what's what. Yo, so that brings another jam-packed, fantastic episode of Techish to a close. Thank you so much for listening. Like we always say, use the hashtag Techish and leave a review on iTunes. We love you guys so much. And actually, one last thing, actually. So on our Patreon account now, I release like content that isn't in the episode. So like sometimes if you want an extra 10, 15 minutes of Techish, like you can go support our Patreon for as little as $5 a month and you can get access to that. And big shout out to our sponsors.
Sponsors, OneTech, Blockstack. I was just going to say, swag it up if you want a t-shirt.
Real talk, we've got t-shirts at techishpod.com. And yeah, we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Cheers.